All right, everybody, welcome back to Golf Adjacent. This is the host, Cannon Claycomb. I am joined by Matt Parziali this morning. How are you, Matt?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, man.
Of course. So we're just going to get right into it. Matt is a mid-am from Brockton, Massachusetts. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Awesome, man. I've known you for a little while now. I've gotten to play some summer golf with you. Always been fascinated with the mid-am aspect of amateur golf. Really just want to get into that. I think a lot of people know you best from the 2017 Mid-Am. You won the U.S. Mid-Am at Capital City Club, which got you into the Masters, the U.S. Open. How was that week for you, and what is, like, the U.S. Mid-Am look like?
Yeah, looking back, so 5 years ago now, almost six. So, I got my amateur status back in 2013. Played professional golf for 3 years, had some success, but not enough to kind of keep going. So when I got it back, I mean, that was one of the reasons to be able to compete and play in the U.S. Mid-Am. And also, I love playing the local stuff here in New England. So we have a great schedule. So to play with the guys. And, you know, I qualified for my first one that first year that I had a chance. And it was a really cool experience. I had played one USAM before that, and that was in 2006. So it was only my second USGA to date. And I missed match play in a playoff. So I was kind of right there. And then you fast forward to 17. In between that time, I played in three others. I was a medalist at one of them in John's Island and made match play in all those, but lost my first match. So the first match I won in U.S. Mid-Am was 2017 and won that first one and then really had a nice week. I was playing well that whole summer. I was able to win my state amateur earlier in July, won a couple of the regional ones. My partner and I did well in the U.S. four ball qualifier. We played in a few of those. So I was starting to play on the national level. I got into some of those mid-am invitationals. The Coleman was my first one in 2017 and also the Crump Cup, which was the week before the U.S. mid-am. And that schedule is always a little up in the air, whether the Crump's first or behind the U.S. mid. So it was nice for me to play that the week before. You get comfortable with the guys. I knew more faces in 2017. So I think that's a big part of golf is the comfort level at the level you're at and feeling like you fit in and you know the people and it's not like you're looking around as much. So yeah, like looking back at that week, it was obviously I was on it. You have to be that week. And I'm really proud of the way I stayed focused on, I know it sounds crazy, but like just one match at a time. And match play, I was always okay, but that year I really got over the hump winning the state amateur, which is also match play, and then in the U.S. mid-am at Capital City.
Yeah, was there anything that like you did differently that week in regards to match play to get over that hump, or was it just like a culmination of a bunch of good things coming together at the right time?
I think it was more at the state amateur in July where that one was really getting to me. I had lost in the finals years before. I had lost in the semis the two previous years, winning matches and losing kind of down the stretch and kind of not losing because I got beat, kind of because I beat myself. And I think I was maybe looking a little too far ahead at times. And in saying that now, like it's not the easiest thing in the world. Like I haven't had that much success since that U.S. mid-am in match play. So, I mean, it's not like it's, you get to one point and it's all downhill. Like it's something you have to work at. It's something you have to pay attention to. So, I mean, our state amateur starts Monday. So I'm trying to get in the best place possible to do that again and be in the right state of mind.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I mean, looking back on that 2017, like, year, I have U.S. Mid-Am champ, Massachusetts mid-amateur second place, Francis We Met Memorial Tournament second place, Massachusetts amateur first place. Were you just like, this is going to be my year, or did something click, or was it just like a culmination of, like I said before, like a bunch of good things that came together at the right time?
You know, like I look back at that, not that I try to recreate it, but I just try to like see the mindset and where I was with my life. I mean, obviously it's much different now. I was like my wife and I, we had just recently got engaged. A lot of life events, she just graduated dental school. So it was like a different part of my life, but I look back at the golf part and I think it all kind of blends together and you have to have everything kind of in line to be able to sort of say, get out of your own right way and compete the best as possible. So, you know, like I was playing well in 2015. I remember when I was medalist at the US Mid Amateur, I had a really great fall, like winning our Mid Am, a lot of good rounds under par, right there in contention. And then 16, I mean, might not have been as good. And then 17, it was kind of like, all right, everything put together, like you said. So the one biggest factor from, I look at 15, which is a really good year, to 17 is I didn't use a driver in 2015. I didn't use a driver from 2013 to the beginning of 2017. I work with Sean Hester up here. I've been working with him since 2009 when I was playing professional golf. And we did great stuff from 09 to 12. Wouldn't change it for the world. Like, it was awesome. But then when I stopped playing, couldn't really afford to see him as much as I'd like to. So kind of took a break from him. And then early in 17, I introduced him to a friend of mine, went to the lesson, and it was his last lesson of the day. And sure enough, he said, hey, you want to hit a few after? It's middle of February. I haven't hit a ball in months. And he knew right what he was doing. And sure enough, by the end of that half hour session, I was hitting his driver and hitting it pretty well. So getting the driver back in the bag for 17 was probably the biggest step forward I needed to make to compete and be in contention at the highest level that I could play in. And now, that being said, at the Massachusetts Amateur in 17, I was probably only hitting driver 50% of the times on holes that required or was okay for me to hit driver on. And then maybe even less than that, maybe even only a third of those. And then even at the US Mid Amateur, I wasn't that comfortable, but I was more comfortable with it. And I was hitting it 2/3 of the time. So, and now I probably hit it too much. It's one of the best clubs in my bag. So, I mean, I look back and that's the whole progression of it. So I think it's everything kind of together, but I was trying to do everything possible to give myself the best chance to compete at the highest level.
Yeah, absolutely. So your college golf was a little different. Interesting, I think. How, like, did you go into college wanting to play professional golf, and like, was that the plan, or did you get there and you realized that, hey, like, I'm pretty good at this. This might be a profession for me down the road.
Yeah. In junior golf, I did okay. Wasn't anywhere near, competing. Getting contention as much as I'd like. I was playing in all the events and doing okay in some. I didn't really have that many offers. I had a couple of D2 chances, and Southeastern was a place that I could pretty much play every event from the time I got there to the time I left. So for me, I've loved to compete. I've always wanted to play as much as possible. And yes, I wanted to play professional golf after college when I was a junior golfer. My game wasn't even close. Like, John Curran was the best player in the world, in the country, one of the best. And we grew up close to each other, still good friends. He was on the PGA Tour. Like, I couldn't even come close to competing with him in junior golf. Like, I remember my dad told me at one event, he goes, just try to keep it within 10 shots of John today. And like, that's how good he was. And I'm sitting here thinking I could play professional golf. So, you know, that's a kid dreaming. And then once I got to college, I had some success and started winning some tournaments, did well at the regional level here, played in one US Amateur, and then gave it a shot. And I had a great time for 3 years. So it was always what I wanted to do, but I just don't think that, I look at the guys out there, and if you're not winning US Juniors and playing the AJGAs and doing all the Northeast, Western, Susquehanna, and competing in them, it's pretty hard to make a big leap to the PGA Tour. Not that it can't be done, but like I had that dream, but just probably didn't have enough experience at the time in the golf world. I think if I had the experience I had now back then, it might be a whole different story. But hey, I'm very happy with where I'm at with the competitive golf I've played and the work I've put in to get to where I am.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. Just back to mid-am for like a second. Like, I'll never be able to experience mid-am. I might be able to, but I haven't so far, and a lot of people haven't. Like, is that lifestyle different? Because, like, for me in college right now, the summers are like a world tour almost. Like, we play 6 or 7 weeks out of the summer. There's only 10 weeks. I know you guys have like a mid-am circuit type of thing. How is that? Like, are you guys close? Is it like a bunch of friends, or is it like everybody's really out to like compete and be a dog, or like how is that world of like mid-am golf?
Yeah, the competition never goes away, from what I can see across the board. But we're definitely really good friends. Like, I really look forward to going to these events and seeing the guys that you only see a handful of times a year. Scott Harvey's one of my best friends on the road, and we usually stay together whenever we are in the same event or close, play the practice rounds together. And I look back, and Scott and I didn't even know each other in 2016, and then you start playing some stuff, and 5 years later, just because you're playing competitive golf, you get to know these people. And that's only with Scott. I mean, there's 20, 30 guys on top of it. I'm just using him as an example there. So it's a really good community to be a part of, but the competition never goes away. And we want to beat all of us. We want to beat everyone, just like it always has been in the competitive golf world.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So I'm from Kentucky, kind of small town. It gets cold in the winter. You're from Mass. It gets very cold, and it's pretty small as well. There's been a ton of talent coming out of Massachusetts in golf lately, like yourself, Michael. There's a long list of guys that are really good coming from Mass right now. What do you think plays into that? Why are these guys so good being from Mass? And like, is it has to do with your state golf association? Like, what is going on in Mass where it's producing all these guys that are really good at golf?
So it's a great question. We've been talking about that in this area for a few years now, 10 years now. I mean, Keegan's from Vermont. He played high school golf in Massachusetts with John. So I'll go back to that time frame, because that's the junior class that I was a part of. So I didn't have I didn't have high school golf team. So I played in junior events. And there's a thing called the U.S. Challenge Cup up here. Dave Adamonis runs it. And that's where I learned how to play competitive golf. And I think that his stamp on the New England area, providing a tournament schedule with multiple events a week to play in and to compete, the competition is where you learn how to play on the road, play in all sorts of conditions. And talk about conditions, we have all sorts of weather. I think Dave's first event, I'm going to say it's the last week of March. That might be wrong. It might be the first week of April. And he goes all the way up to Thanksgiving, where there was some days I played in the snow or sleet or heavy rain and wind. So I think the elements and the competitive nature around here is what has given this area people that are out there making a name for themselves. And look at Keegan. He won again 2 weeks ago. So I think that's a big part of it. But then you also look at Mass Golf, and they've done such a great job with running a state golf association and giving the juniors great tournaments to play in, like the elite level tournaments, the Mass Junior Amateur, that kind of thing. They really do a great job. So you have Dave, who gives a full schedule, and then you have Mass Golf that kind of runs these bigger ones that these kids are ready to go because they've been able to play on the schedule that Dave's provided, and you're getting really good competition across the board.
Yeah. So I've summered the last two summers up in Long Island, kind of the same thing. Like, it's a very short season, but the amount of golf up here and the amount of high level golf is pretty crazy. Is your area in Mass kind of similar in that way, where the season's not very long, but people are very into the sport and have the opportunity to go out and play during the summer? Is there like a good amount of public golf, or is it mostly private? Like, what does that look like during the summers in Mass?
Yeah, there's a good mix up here. I think there's probably more private than there is public. But I think the biggest part is that the season is so short, is that when we have the chance to go and you get that first nice day, you go until it starts snowing again. And you don't get burnt out. You don't get sick of it. Because then, you know, that you're putting them away come Thanksgiving or maybe a little bit before. I kind of shut it down when the tournament portion of the calendar year is over, and that's kind of mid-October for me. But some people will try to go until the last nice day, which could be close to Christmas. So I think because it's such a short time frame of nice weather, so to say, that everyone tries to get as much in as possible, which keeps it a very competitive and fun part, a competitive nature. And no one wants to miss a tournament because it's not another one 2 months later at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That would be really cool. So I think a lot of the draw after you won the Mid-Am to you was you served as a firefighter in Brockton, Mass. Until 2019, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, so was that, like, always a dream of yours? Like, did you grow up and you wanted to be a firefighter, or just kind of, like, your career and your life kind of ended up being that way? Like, how did you become a firefighter in Brockton?
Yeah, so my dad was a firefighter, and he retired, I think, in 2017. He did 32 years, so that's what I grew up seeing. When professional golf didn't work out, my dad and I started flipping some houses in the area. It was just after 2008, so there was still some foreclosure kind of houses and houses that needed some work. And we did a few of those, and I had took the firefighter test just before we started doing that, just to get my name out, get my name on the list with a chance of hopefully getting on. I looked at my dad. He had a great career, enjoyed going to work. I knew most of the guys just from being around him in the station. So I knew it was a place that I would fit in and be able to have a fun career and something I enjoyed doing. And it provided a schedule as well to try to play as much competitive golf as I could, just because of the 24-hour shifts. Now, that wasn't always easy. I'd have to find swaps, and I'm sure it was pretty annoying for the upper officers in the department dealing with guys coming in, but they were great about it, and I was able to kind of make the tournament schedule work. So I kind of, that's the reason why I wanted to get into firefighting. And I'll tell you what, I love that career. I had so much fun doing it. I enjoyed the guys, the fires. And the only reason that I stopped is I had other opportunities, and the health risk, the way your body feels. Those are the two main factors of why I stepped away. I'll always appreciate my time and enjoy it. I got to fight a fire with my dad before he retired, which is probably one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. So that was a nice time in my life.
Yeah, that's an insane story. What was golf like being, you know, in the firehouse like 3 or 4 days a week? Like, I know you touched on it a little bit, but were you having like scheduled days where it was like, okay, today I work, and then here I play 36 holes, and then I work, and then we practice today? Like, what did that schedule look like? And like, was it, it sounded like it was very on the fence sometimes, like you'd have to call in or have someone fill, but what did like a week look like for you while you were in the firehouse?
Yeah. So our schedule was, right when I got on, the city of Brockton went to 24-hour shifts. They used to, before that, they would do 10-hour days and 14-hour nights. And that was a whole different schedule. But what we would do is 1:24 on, 2:24s off, 1:24 on, 3:24s off. I think I got that right. I'm sorry, 4 off. So yeah, it was an 8-day rotation. You work 2:24s out of those 8 days. And a lot of the time, I'll never forget my first year on, I found myself in a playoff at the Mass Open, and I had someone working for me for the day, but because I was in the playoff, it was super delayed. I had to play the playoff, and I got there. I had someone hold over for an hour until I could get there. And that's my first year. I've been on the job for 6 months, and I'm like, I'm showing up late. Like, so it was definitely some stressful times. But at the time in my life, like, that's what I had to do to be able to play competitive golf, was try to manage this. So I don't think it was the easiest of times, but I would do all I could to try to manage that. I mean, honestly, man, I've just tried to play as much competitive golf as I've, since I've been a junior golfer. So it's just kind of, I just try to find ways to make it happen. So, it was, you find in swaps, usually your vacation days. My wife now, we were trying to do trips, and I was like, oh no, I got to save all my vacation days for golf tournaments. She didn't like that answer. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, but, I'm pretty happy the way I've managed it to date. I've definitely pushed the boundaries as much as I could, but that's what keeps me going, and I love it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So you said you fought a fire with your dad. Was there like one or two experiences while you were a firefighter that like stand out to you, maybe like a crazy fire or just like a story like that? Do you have anything?
Yeah, so those two, and it's funny. They're actually the house fires were pretty close to each other. That one that I got to fight with my dad, I was working overtime in his group, They don't put family members in the same group, just in case something bad happens. It won't affect the family twice. But I got called for overtime. It was the middle of winter of 2015. And we just came off 3 weeks of, I think it was over 10 feet of snow with three different storms. So house fire comes in, it was like 2 a.m. And the station I was at, we were right around the corner. It was actually right next to the golf course that we play at. So we came over the hill and you could see the glow. Like it was definitely a good one. So we pulled up and we were the first truck there and we put the water on the house from the outside, which you're supposed to do when the fire is shown. We did everything right. Unfortunately, because the snow banks are so high, the hydrants were a little bit covered and they couldn't find it as quickly. So now we used all the water we brought. We didn't have any more. And so now we're kind of sitting there. And then I heard my dad was on ladder one. I heard him call off that ladder one's off of the house fire. And I was like, oh geez. Like we have no water. I'm sitting here at the front door. And here he comes. And sure enough, like he grabbed another, his truck grabbed another hose off one of the other trucks that came behind him. They brought that in and we got to fight the fire together with a couple of the companies that were there. So it was a really cool experience that we got to do a lot of what the initial work at a fire, which is the most fun part, is the first 15 minutes. And after that, it's all heavy lifting and trying to just move stuff around to make sure it's out. So we got to do that together, which was a really cool experience. And then another one, one other little story is pretty close to the same area. I was working Christmas for a gentleman. I didn't have kids, so I worked Christmas Day for him. My fiance was out of town and my tour was the next one. So I was on a 48-hour shift. So it was a December 25th, December 26th, another house fire comes in. It was 3 o'clock in the morning of the last 48. It was the morning of my last part of that 48-hour tour. So we get there. We're there for a half an hour. And then I finally realized that the house that was on fire was my grandfather's house, my great-grandfather's house.
Oh, wow.
So a house that I had been in when I was 10, but I hadn't been there in years. So that was a nice fire and one of the better ones I got to fight before I left the job.
Yeah, dude, that's insane. That would be such a crazy life. So you said you took a new opportunity. You're selling insurance now, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I'm with Delane Gibson. We've got an office in Wellesley, Mass., which is just west of Boston. I've been with them about 2 years now, and it's been a great experience. Two brothers own it. They're into golf. They get the schedule. I get a lot of business from golf. So it's a really nice place where I landed, and I'm enjoying my career there.
Yeah. So what kind of pushed you to go away from firefighting and into this, you know, insurance game? And do you think that's helped your golf game, or do you think it's hurt it, or like what are the hours look like with that?
So I'm pretty flexible. I'm in sales. I don't think it's hurt my golf game. My body was very beat up as a firefighter. There was times I'd work all night and go to a golf tournament, feel pretty tired and not be able to really swing the way I wanted to, think the way I wanted to. Patients were not where they need to be. So, but that was my life. So I wasn't going to complain. So, I don't have an excuse. Like I should be ready. I should be rested. I should have my body in the best shape possible. So those are the benefits of being able to have the flexibility of a sales job. Is it a little bit more demanding on like, yeah, you gotta go find the business and that's the way you're gonna earn income? Yes, but I enjoy the challenge there. And the reason that I left firefighting was for the flexibility to be able to play competitive golf, to not have to worry about finding swaps, and the health thing of firefighters getting cancer pretty rapidly just because of the toxinogens from smoke. It's a real thing. And, you know, we only get one chance at this. So trying to be as healthy as possible. And I think those are all the factors that played into that decision. So,
yeah, absolutely. Do they will you do like days where you'll take clients out and play golf? Like, is that part of the gig?
Yeah. It's not that the owners asked me to do that, but if I'm trying to get the business, I'll definitely run it by them. Like, hey, I got these guys that own a business and they want to play. That's definitely part of it. So, and that's where you get to meet people and you get relationships, you get to know people. So I don't do as much of that as I used to. I kind of try to pick my spots. And I think when I first got into it, I was probably overdoing it and not learning enough side of the business and just trying to play as much and meet people. But I think that's worked out because those people that I played with 3-4 years ago when I got in, they're still around and still have chances at doing business with them. So, you know, I never look at kind of a day as, oh, that didn't happen right away. Like I'm saying, like with a person, that the business didn't come right away, but it might come around in 2-3 years down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So after your mid-am win, you got into the 2018 U.S. Open and Masters. You've also qualified for U.S. Open through sectionals, I believe. So I guess first I want to talk about the U.S. Open because they're so different, right? Like I want to separate these experiences. What was your first U.S. Open like? And then what was the second one after you got to see it the first time?
So my first one was 2018 at Shinnecock. I knew I was playing that one. The year I won the mid-am at the USGA reception dinner on Thursday night, they announced that the winner of the mid-am going forward was going to earn an exemption to the U.S. Open. So that was at Capital City Club. So I knew when I won that I was likely getting an invite to the Masters, which I hate that term, likely. Like they say it's always likely, but it's likely a Masters invite and an exemption to the U.S. Open. So I was able to get to Shinnecock even at the end of 17, play it, took another couple trips early 18, got to play the course quite a bit, get a good game plan and a good feel of the area. And I did well there. I was very happy with the way I played. I was able to make a putt on 18 to secure myself to make the cut and not have to watch the leaderboard. I was right on that line. I was able to make a nice one down the hill, which got me to 7 over. I think the cut ended up being 8, but 7 over was in. So I got to play the weekend. Did really well on the weekend. Had one bad stretch on the front nine on Sunday. And I had a little bit of a mishap on 16 on Saturday when I had a really good round going. I think I was even or one over going down 16. I four putted, but that got me up the leaderboard. I don't know if you remember that Saturday. It was crazy with how difficult it played. So I had a chance at low amateur. I kind of gave that away on the front nine on Sunday, but played really good the last 6 holes and was able to tie Lewis Gagne for low am at that U.S. Open. So really great experience. I played really solid for 4 days. I think I was 16 over and I was right around, I think I shot 73, 74, 74, 75, whatever those were and out of those. So pretty consistent way, the way I played the course. Happy with the way I drove it. When I was in trouble, kind of just took my medicine and kept moving forward. So I was proud of that. That was a tough challenge of golf. They did a great job there with how hard the course was. And so yeah, that was good. And then I was fortunate enough to be able to qualify at Pebble. You qualify and then you're making plans and you're on a plane 6 days later. I actually did really well at Pebble. The way I played, I had one poor hole. I made a 9 on 18. I was in the rocks. I was out of bounds. I was in the water. So that was on my 9th hole of the second day when I pretty much had a chance to make it if I played a good last 10 holes and it went south there. So had a chance to make both those cuts, made one, super happy with that, take a gold medal from the for the low amateur, which is really cool to have from the USGA. So those are great experiences.
Absolutely, yeah. And then like inversely, you have the Masters, right, which is kind of the pinnacle in my opinion. Like it's so guarded and people know so little about it. What was it like? You said likely get an invitation, right? Like how would they not invite you, right? Like did you have to do something to be not invited?
No, I think like that's like that's just what they said. So what I take that as is like if you kind of, I don't know, maybe get arrested or do something wrong, they can pull that invite and they don't have to invite you, kind of thing, or they find out you're not a good person, that kind of thing. So I feel like that's why that term is used. So it's not like, oh, we're going to take this mid amateur, but not this one. It's not like the field fills up and you're last one out. It's just, I think that there's room for them to deny an invitation if they don't want you to play in that event.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Masters, right, is a small field, and the U.S. Open's a massive field. Like, when you got on the grounds at Augusta National, did everything feel kind of smaller? Like, not in a like a hosting type of way, but like, there's not that many players. You see everybody in the locker room. Like, was that different than the U.S. Open?
It was. It's definitely a lot more moving parts of the U.S. Open. Augusta was harder to figure out because it's Augusta. Like, the USGA, it's U.S. Open. There's more signs. There's more direction. Augusta's kind of like, hey, you should know where you're going kind of thing. So I got a little more turned around there. I'll never forget this. After my first round, you come off the green, and I was just standing there. You just get put kind of back into the gallery, and then you got to get under this big tree, and there's some media, and I'm sitting there. And I pulled my best friend under the rope, and Allie, my wife now, at the time, we were just engaged at the time. I pulled them under the rope and was standing there. And then I'm like, I feel in my back pocket, I still have the scorecard, Brendan Steele's scorecard. I look at them like, where do I go with this thing? So I had no idea what the scoring tent was after my first round. And it was a good 10 minutes before I figured this out. Like, we're just sitting there talking about the round, talking about the experience. So I run in there, and it was Mike Ware and Brendan Steele, like, oh, we thought you were just talking to your family, no worries at all. And I felt horribly because I thought I'd just leaving them hanging, which I was, because I didn't even know I had to sign my card. So that was one little funny story from that one.
Yeah, so, like, obviously the amateur champ and the amateur runner-up, they spend some time in Butler Cabin. Like, did you have a day where you were able to do the whole Butler Cabin thing?
You know, I was fortunate enough to be able to spend one night there. I have a friend that's a member. He hosted me, my dad, and my best friend for a weekend. And the night we stayed over was in Butler Cabin. It wasn't tournament week, but it was a few weeks before. And that was a really cool experience. And it wasn't anything what it looks like when CBS is in there with the interviews. Like, it's a cottage that members stay in and guests stay in during the season. So that's when we had it. So it was pretty cool.
That's really cool. What did, like, practice rounds look like for you that week? Were there guys that you sought out or just kind of, like, fit in? Or how did that work?
So I played with some members on Saturday. The same member that brought me, like, he had me in his group for Saturday. It's the last day members can play. On Sunday, they allow players to play without the galleries. And I played with Charles Schwartzel, Louis Eustace, and Pat Perez. And then Matt Rollins also. Pat Perez left after the front nine, and Matt Rollins jumped in on the – I'm sorry, Matt Rollins and Louis jumped in on the back nine. And then on Monday, I did have this setup with Rory, where I met Rory's manager at the Honda back in February, who's a good – his manager's a good friend of one of mine, and they were able to set up that practice round for Rory and I. Monday, we played 18 holes. On Tuesday, I played with Brendan Steele. I met Brendan through Keegan. They're really good friends, and – Brendan was great to me that whole week. He's probably the person I knew the most in the field, and I was able to get paired with him in the event too, which was a nice comfortable setting for me, because he's one of the only people that I knew. And then I met Tiger at Medalist in February. He sent me a letter just after I had won the US Mid Amateur back in October, and so I just went up to him and I thanked him for sending me the letter, which was super nice of him. And it's right behind me on the wall, and I'll never forget that. It was a really cool experience. I said thank you. He goes, hey, we'll play a practice trap. I didn't think anything of it. And his caddy Joey is from New England area. We have some of the mutual friends, and that's how we kind of set this up. Joey just texted me Wednesday night, and Tuesday night. And he goes, hey, Tiger, you Tiger and Freddie tomorrow around 11 o'clock. I was like, yeah, perfect. So we were able to play nine holes on Wednesday. He was incredibly nice to me, trying to help me every step of the way. And that was an unbelievable experience. So I was pretty fortunate with the practice rounds there.
Yeah, that's insane, dude. So you have Tiger's number?
No, I have Joey's number. So one off.
Yeah, so my coach, Sewell at Alabama, he always tells us this story walking with him at the Players. And he hit it over the back of the green on like 11 or 12 at TPC Sawgrass, which long on any of those greens isn't very good. And he was hitting these chips, and he was hitting them so perfect, like high and soft. And coach kind of went over there and was like, hey, how are you hitting this shot? And he showed him. And he was watching JT and some other guy hit chips from this like very X spot on the green, like where you would never want to be. And Sewell was like, hey, Tiger, why aren't you hitting any shots from there? And he looked him dead in the eyes and was like, because I know I'll never hit it there.
Yeah.
Was that, like, pretty evident in the practice round? Like, it seems like this dude just was able to plot his way around a golf course better than anyone and have the talent to match it. But was that kind of the vibe that you got from him playing with him?
100%. Like, that was it, without even him saying it, you could just tell. You don't see that on TV. You don't see it the way they talk about it, the way he's playing. That's, I mean, obviously, in my opinion, he's the best iron player we've ever seen. But take that out. Even if he wasn't the best iron player we've ever seen, he'd still win because he's just so much – he dissects the course so much better than anyone else. Like, the seventh hole was slightly downwind the day we played. And I grabbed driver walking off six. And he goes, hey, Matt, grab your three wood. He goes, if this is any downwind, it's not a driver. And I'm like, it might have been 2 miles an hour downwind. And it's like, this is stuff that he thinks about. And that's a minor thing. But I could just tell the way he was going into greens, where he was going on the greens. He knew where he was going to play this golf course from before he knew where the pins were, before he knew where the wind was. He had his game plan. And that's definitely evident. And it's pretty impressive to see him. The way he thinks about those things.
Yeah, that's insane. What a story to have. So this might sound like a little insensitive, but like as a mid-am, right, you've already done the professional golf thing. When you're playing these summer events, like those are your events. And then are you even thinking about playing PGA Tour events, or is it trying to get into majors for you? Like obviously a PGA Tour event would be great, but I feel like the focus might be you're playing these mid-am events at a really high level at really nice places, and then you want to play the U.S. Open and the Masters and maybe the British. Like, is that far off, or how does that sound?
I mean, man, if they gave me a PGA Tour card, I'd obviously go right now. Like, I want to play golf at the highest level. I want to compete with the best in the world. But, like, life is also a big factor in this, and there's responsibilities and financial. So you got to kind of – you have these, like, I'll never not have the dream of playing on the PGA Tour, even though I'm not pursuing it, if that makes any sense.
No, absolutely.
Like, I'm not doing anything to play in PGA Tour events. Like, I'm not playing Monday qualifiers. I'm not thinking about Q School. I'm not thinking about anything. But if someone's like, hey, here's a PGA Tour card, yeah, I'm all in. So I guess that kind of separates the two where, yes, it is the major. Like, yeah, I won the Mid-Am in 17, and I'm more hungry now than I've ever been to win that tournament in 2023. So I don't know if that answers the question, but that's kind of where my mindset is on that.
Yeah, no, it does. Cause like for me, right, I'm looking at like Monday qualifiers, like left and right, trying to figure out which one fits in the schedule and all that stuff. So that makes sense. I guess
like, I haven't looked at a Monday qualifier since the last, I think it was called the Nationwide Tour last time I tried it. Like I haven't looked, I used to look at that schedule all day, every day. And now I haven't looked at it. So I guess that's kind of what you're saying there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it makes sense. Like, you have a full schedule, and then you have the opportunity to play at majors. So, I don't know why you would. Last two questions, I guess. The Mid-Am is at, what, Sleepy Hollow this year?
Yep.
So, that's kind of a home game, somewhat, correct?
Yeah, it's nice. You can drive to that one. It's probably about 3 hours away. I'm going to try and get down there before. I've got some friends there that offer to host. So, be nice to see that place. And then, of course, is Fenway. So, I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, so what does that week look like for you? Because, like, a USAM is super long. Mid-Am, I would imagine, is the same way. Like, are you getting there a couple of days in advance and doing a bunch of practice rounds? Or, like you said, you had maybe a connection. Like, what does that week look like for you?
Yeah, so for that one, that's a Saturday-Sunday start where Stroke plays Saturday-Sunday. So I'll probably drive down Wednesday morning, play each course Thursday-Friday. But I'll try to get down there. They don't let you play that week, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday down there. So there's no reason to get there before Wednesday. You can practice on Wednesday probably. So if I am able to get down there, it would be weeks in advance just to see the places. But that week, I'll drive down Wednesday morning, get to the course, register, play my practice round Thursday, Friday, and then stroke play starts Saturday, Sunday. It is a long week like the USAM, but it's a little bit more condensed where we go 18 – round of 64 is on Monday, and then it's 32, 16 Tuesday, 8, 4 Wednesday, and then the 36-hole final on Friday, right where the USAM is 18 holes on round of 8 and 4, and then the 36-hole final. So it's just a little bit shorter of a more condensed week, even though it is the same amount of matches.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's interesting, dude. What do you have next? And what should we be expecting out of you for the rest of the season?
Yeah, so our big stretch up here starts on Monday, and that's our Mass Amateur, which is at Essex up in the North Shore this year, which is one of my favorite courses in Mass. So it's a really fun place to play. And then the week after is the New England Am. That's up in Maine this year. That's a fun one to play. That's a stroke play. And then we have our state stroke play, which is called the We Met, which is another local just west of Boston, a course called Oakley for the first 2 days. Then it moves to Woodland the last day. Woodland always hosts the last day. So that's our big stretch. Unfortunately, I missed USAM last week, so August is pretty quiet. And then September is the Mid-Am stuff. We got the Crump Cup, the Mass Mid-Am, and the US Mid-Am. So I feel great about the way I'm playing. I'm having so much fun competing. I'm in the best state of mind I've ever been in. And none of this means anything until you go do it. So I'm excited to give this a shot and do my best the rest of the year. But I'm actually super proud of the work I've put in, not only physically, but the mental aspect, the sort of say workouts, the nutrition. I've done a lot of work there to give myself as much time to compete for the rest of my life. Is that's kind of where my head is. Like it's I'm getting older, so it's about longevity now. I feel like I'm very proud of the work I've put into where I am today. So,
well, that's great, Ben. Well, thank you for coming on. I enjoy playing with you every time we get to tee it up, and I hope I get to see you soon. So, thank you for doing this, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I think we met at the Ocean Forest for the Jones Cup, and then we were also paired at Northeast. So, hopefully, we get another pairing again because it's always been a blast with you.
Absolutely, bro. And my father says hi.
I'll tell him hello.
Loves walking as well.
That's
all
right,
man. Well, thank you for coming on. Hopefully, we can do this again sometime, and best of luck.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks,
Ben.
All right, bye.